Good afternoon. Hello. Welcome. My name is Jeff. I'm a compulsive overeater, 100-pounder, and welcome to the 12-stepping problem panel discussion. I've got a 12. That's a whole lot. No, I'm not going to make that joke. Okay. We will each introduce ourselves and qualify, and then we're going to speak for 10 minutes. And then another 10 minutes again. So we're each going to take two cracks at it because we were talking earlier, and in order to do step 12, as the book tells us, you cannot give away something you haven't got. So we want to talk about how to get what you need to give it away before we talk about giving it away. So we're going to take the first pass is going to be how we got what we think we can so freely give away, and the second part is the actual action of giving that away. So that's how we're going to break it down. If you don't like it, you can see Harlan. No, that's not true. I just made a joke. You can see me. Is there someone in the audience who'd be willing to time? We already took care of that. Thank you very much. And our first speaker is me, apparently, so that's embarrassing. Well, my name is Jeff. I am a compulsive overeater, a 100-pounder. Since a picture is worth 1,000 words, here's a few thousand words of pictures, so I don't have to talk about it. I will tell you that I was fat before I knew what food was. I had a problem. We talk about our problems. We say our problem isn't food. Well, to a large extent, my problem was food because I was involuntarily fat. I was a chubby kid, a chubby baby. My mother was a compulsive overeater. She didn't know how to, nourish us properly. And so I was, part of my problem was that I was fat and I was made fun of all the time. So the cunning and baffling and powerful nature of this disease, I would eat to get over the fact that people were making fun of me because I was fat. Or I would eat because I had to go to the husky size or the big man's store and all that other stuff. And I won't belabor it, but, I was a kid in the 60s and early 70s, and there was no political correctness, and anybody could make fun of me, and it was perfectly okay. Parents, teachers were doing it, as well as administrators, strangers, the other kids. Last thing I'll say about that is in seventh grade, I had a teacher who it was perfectly legal for anybody to come up behind me in class and pinch my fat cheeks. He would call it a cheek attack, and he thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And I, how do you protect a kid trying to learn, in this case, Spanish, anytime someone grab your cheeks, or protect my psyche as a human being? And apparently he didn't care about either of those things. He just wanted to get a laugh. So I have a problem, and whenever I have a problem, I have one answer, and that answer is food. And it was subconscious at first and unconscious, and then it became conscious. But it didn't matter because the answer was food. Now, I come into Overeaters Anonymous, and I'm told that I am powerless over food. For the first thing I'm told is that I'm powerless over food. My life has become unmanageable. Admitted, I was powerless over food. Well, the definition of the word admit is to come to the truth reluctantly. I've been listening to Sandy Beach tapes from AA, and as Sandy likes to say, nobody comes into this program on a roll. Okay, I was not at the highest point of my life when I decided, hey, I'm doing sociology and I'm coming to see you guys and see what you got to offer. I needed you, and I was told I was powerless over food. My life had become unmanageable. So I had one answer, and that answer was food. I am powerless over that answer. Now I've got to find a higher power, come to believe in a power greater than myself, and I've got to turn my will and my life over. What does that mean to me? To me, that means that I need to have one answer, and that answer has to be God. So I had one answer. I'm a very binary guy, right? When I was dieting, I was on or off, right? I was either on a diet, and you couldn't get me to... I have my kids have a nanny, and my nanny, I once was angry at my nanny for cooking something I couldn't eat while I was on a diet. And she said to me, boss, when you're on a diet, nothing can stop you. And when you're not on a diet, I could bury a candy bar in the backyard and you'd find it, dig it up and eat it. And she was 100% right. 100% right. I still was angry at her, but she was 100% right. And so my answer was food. One answer. Now, you're telling me my answer is God. One answer. Binary. There's no, that's it. So how am I going to do, so I need to get this message before I can transmit it. Because we're talking about the 12th step, which is carrying the message to those who still suffer. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And here's the conundrum with step 12 in my view, which is that when I got the most attention of for losing weight in the first year or 18 months of my program, while I was working the steps, I hadn't had the complete spiritual awakening. I really was not in a position to carry the message. So how am I going to tell somebody who comes up to me and says, "Oh my God, you look great," which is a matter of opinion, but, "Oh my God, you look great." And I say, "Yeah, thanks." And they said, "Okay, what are you doing?" And I'm too embarrassed to tell them that I'm in the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous because I haven't had this full spiritual awakening. I'm still struggling with step 4 of what a shitheel I had been throughout the rest of my life. Or step 5, or trying to have the defects removed. Or making the list of people I had harmed. Or God forbid, telling them. And I did all of those steps, but, you know, it takes time. And I was, you know, orthodox sponsorship of through the AA Big Book and the AA 12 and 12, which is not exactly a race to the finish line. So I was doing the work, but I was too embarrassed to tell people. And then after a while, I got to the point where I could say, "Okay, do you want the easy answer or the hard answer?" That was my maturity, you know, as I got like deeper into the steps. The easy answer would be I gave up sugar. And if they said, "No, I want the hard answer," I would tell them. I cannot tell you how many glassy sets of eyes I stared into, when, you know, rolling their eyes, because people don't get it. I go to the doctor and I tell the doctor I can't stop eating, and he says, "Go on protein shakes." Well, great fucking idea, and I did it, by the way, and I lost 80 pounds in 6 months. And gained 100 in the next 6 months because it didn't fix me. I went to look at the gastric bypass, and you know the guy said, the physician said, "We can do this. Just see my shrink, and she'll tell me you're fine." That were the words that came out of his mouth, and I knew when he said that I wasn't fine, that I needed to fix my head and my heart, not my belly. And so I called another therapist, and he Eskimo'd me in here. But, you know, it's at that point when you're losing the weight, it's so difficult because I really don't have the program down. So how do I effectively carry the message? You know, it's a program of attraction rather than promotion. So I need to be the best, you know, the best representative of this program in all facets of my life. I need to be able to say to somebody, not only has the program changed my waistline, and if you look at the pictures, you can see it's 110 pounds. I've been doing this. I should have started with this. I'm sorry. Been absent for 6.5 years. I've lost 110 pounds. I don't know why I stopped here. If you saw what I ate, you would look at you. If you know, and my sponsor sees it every day, and you would say, "Wow, that's like a normal amount of food. Why aren't you thinner?" And the answer is, I don't know. You know, and maybe I should exercise. Perhaps that might, you know, solve a little bit of the problem. But the point is that, I eat sanely today. And today I am in a position to carry the message. And in a few minutes when it comes back to me, we'll talk about, you know, about a little bit more about that. Because the first 10 minutes we wanted to share on is actually how we get to the point where we can carry the message, how we get to the point where we are happy, joyous, and free, where we shine with that light that we see in people who have recovery. And for me, it's getting a sponsor, listening to the sponsor. I do not eat anything I do not make any food decisions on my own. I'm 57 years old. I cannot make a food decision on my own because my intuition is my disease. I have a broken brain. I need someone who has a less broken brain to guide me through these decisions. So I have a sponsor, same guy as my food sponsor, my step sponsor, because if I had two, I would job them. I would tell them each something else, and I would lie to everybody. Because in addiction, the first victim of addiction is the truth. And before I came into these programs, you could not rely on anything I said. Now you can rely on everything that I say. And that's how I get to the point where I feel like I am in a position to carry the message. I will stop now and give it to Audrey, who's going to speak on a little bit of in the same arena, and then we'll go to Harlan, and then we'll come back and talk about the actual carrying of the message once we have something to transmit. Audrey?
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks so much for your talk. And I don't think she's in the room, but I really want to thank Courtney for asking me to come in here and share today. I have an abstinence date of April 17th, 1993, 22 years of recovery in Overeaters Anonymous, and I've never been recorded. I've never, like, you light a candle, people. I've never been recorded, and I thought to myself, should I wear a dress? You know, because I have such a deep respect for Overeaters Anonymous, and, you know, when I've been asked to speak, I try and wear my third dimension recovery. You know, I appreciate what you had to say, Jeff, about, you know, weight loss and being ready to lose weight and I know that Overeaters Anonymous has reconstructed its primary purpose. It's not just to be willing to not compulsively overeat one day at a time. It's also revised that we are to work towards a normal body weight. And I don't know that we practice it that much. I go to meetings on the West Side. I, you know, went 8 years every Sunday to Serenity Sunday, if anybody knows that, in Roxbury Park. I live in Santa Monica, and I find, when I talk about the 12 step, I find that there's so many different ways to recover in Overeaters Anonymous. There's the compulsive overeater, there's the bulimic, there's the anorexic, there's the body obsessor, there's the over-exerciser. And what I think is really important, what Jeff pointed out, you can't get to 12 unless you get to 1, 2, 3, and then, you know, really doing the work. And I've found that I've been around long enough that I've done it so many ways, I get confused. I get really confused about how to do it. I've had a sponsor for 22 years, and this last year, 2015, we decided to part ways. And I am so sad because somebody really knows me. Like, this woman taught me how to grow up. And, you know, I didn't hunt her down. She didn't hunt me down. I remember at Roxbury Park, it was like 150 people. It was set up like this room, but the seats were a little more full. And there was this We Care book that went around. You know, first of all, are there any newcomers in the room? Is there anybody here? Their first meeting. Hi. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I just remember when I was new and there were just so many people and they were all talking and laughing and having a good time that, you know, I wasn't sure I was going to fit in. And I remember at Roxbury Park in this very large meeting, I volunteered to do this horrible job, which was to clean up the coffee pots. And the coffee pots were big and the grinds, they were those big ones. And I thought, oh, my God, I fit in. This is it. And that was the beginning of my recovery where I got to learn more about myself. And speaking on a panel helps me to learn more about myself. And showing up every day in Overeaters Anonymous helps me to learn more about myself and my resistance and the defiance and all those things that we learn in steps 1, 2, and 3. Jeff had mentioned that it's attraction, not promotion. And again, I've heard people, you know, in the meetings, it's so great to go to as many meetings as you can and hear as much recovery as you can. And, you know, to the newcomer, it's a language that's taken me so long to understand. And I still, as it's been told, to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I found in Overeaters Anonymous is that I so relate to the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I brought it, and I call it the chocolate book. I'm not afraid of chocolate, and I'm also not afraid of vanilla. And this is the for today, and it's you know, it's a daily, it's a daily reading on how, it's just one little tool on how to reach your higher power. Because what I found, and that the topic is the 12-stepping problem, and I'm like, oh my God, a problem. Whenever I hear that there's a problem, I immediately put my dukes up. It's not me. I didn't do it. It's your fault. Whose fault? Is it a problem? And I don't know that 12-stepping, I don't know that there can be a problem around 12-stepping, because I think just showing up in a meeting, just seeing someone sitting in the same seat, even if it's a newcomer, sometimes the newcomers give me so much life by their dedication and their eagerness and their willingness to get it right. So, you know, I heard someone speak last night about third dimension recovery, which was property, prestige, relationships, cars, houses, you know, tangible stuff. And I sort of transfer that into Overeaters Anonymous to weight loss, weighing and measuring, you know, that kind of thing. It's like really concrete third dimension recovery. And I'm not saying it's bad, but what I just heard today is we can lose weight. I've lost weight. I've gained it back. I'm not a 100-pounder. I'm a bulimic. My God gap, the problem is, do I call my food in the day or do I write down a 10-step at night? And what happens in between? And the gap is my relationship with God. The God gap is how I feel in my skin that day. There are days I know I might not eat the best thing for me that day. It's maybe not a losing abstinence that day. It might be a little vanilla. It might be a little chocolate. I'm not saying, you know, I shared a meeting. I think I have 1 minute. I shared a meeting the other day that something really good happened to me. I'm in retail, and there was a company named Fred Siegel, and they called me and placed an order. And I was so happy I bought a candy bar. And then I wrecked my car, you know, on the way to get things to fulfill this order. And I just shared that the other day in the car. And then the other day something really bad happened. And I picked up just a handful, little sweet little things, and I hit a car. So, you know, driving under the influence of Whoppers. You know, it's just like alcohol, you know. And a friend of mine said, do you think this is a wake-up call? And I was like, yeah, it could be. You know, it could be. And how did I feel in my skin that day? Well, not so good. So maybe for the rest of the day, I won't have Whoppers. You know, maybe for just today, for right now that my time is up, I can make decisions based on my serenity with God, and which is my whole another 10 minutes to talk about the G-O-D word. Anyway, thanks for giving me my time, and I pass this on to Harlan.
I'm Harlan. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I have, I came in 1979. I have 17 years of back-to-back abstinence. I've lost a little over 500 pounds since the beginning. I'm very glad to be here today. Thank you. My higher power thanks you. The first thing that I look at when I see the 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Interestingly enough, this is one of the things that was changed. This is the thing that was changed in the big book. The first printing of the big book in April of 1939 had having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps. And then after being deluged with letters about what are we doing wrong, we're doing everything it says, and we're not having this sudden spiritual experience, Bill changed the words to spiritual awakening, and he added Appendix 2, which appears in the fourth edition on page 567. And long before there was a big book, and long before there was anything about the 12th step, what we have to look at, very importantly here, is having had a spiritual awakening. Now, let's take a look at that. Because in order for me to be able to pass this message of the big book, which is the only message we have, I have to have had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. So it is vital that I have one, and it is vital that I work the steps. And it is vital that I stay out of the food. Because if I'm picking up food and I'm not working the steps, I cannot have a spiritual awakening as a result of anything And we come in here and we are confused. And what's the first thing that confuses us? The first thing that confuses most people here is that food is the problem. That's not true. Food is not the problem. If you are a compulsive overeater, food is not the problem. If you eat compulsively, it is. Now, compulsive overeater, eat compulsively. Boy, they sound the same, don't they? They're worlds apart. Worlds apart. If you eat compulsively once in a while and you find yourself gaining a little weight, you can self-regulate your food and you're good. You're done. But if you are a compulsive overeater, you have something that has to be dealt with, and it's a twofold thing. The first one being, we have to look at what the problem really is. Now, all human beings have emotions. Happiness, sadness, anger, fear, jealousy, guilt, shame, remorse, anticipation. All these various human emotions in a normal human being build up, and they can be dissipated by walking the dog, going to the gym, having sex, having a glass of wine. These people know how to diminish the level of that emotion very quickly, very nicely. But in us, they don't regulate like that. They linger, they bounce around. And somewhere, before I had language, before I was out of diapers, before I knew what mommy and daddy's names were, all of a sudden my brain registered a solution to the problem that I had with the buildup of those emotions. And when those emotions screamed out to my brain for some relief to the untenable pain of not eating, and the pain of not eating is overwhelmingly horrible, and that's why every one of us in this room, in the face of every reason not to, Dr. Silkworth says, we know that it is injurious. We cannot tell the truth from the false. We tell ourselves that this time it's going to be okay. Why is it that we tell ourselves that? We don't tell ourselves it's okay to take a stapler and staple our eye. We don't tell ourselves that it's okay to electrocute ourselves, but we tell ourselves it's okay to eat a candy bar because we are seeking a relief from that pain. And the food happens after this happens. The brain says, uh-oh, he's feeling fear. And the mental twist says, eat a Butterfinger. And the intelligent part of my brain says, oh, no, I'm not eating a Butterfinger. I want to at least go on one more date before I die. I want to at least have one more fling before I die. And the emotional part of the brain says, eat a Butterfinger. Now, listen to me, because this could be something, if you're anything like me, that's important. Anytime there is a battle between the emotional side of the brain and the intelligent side of the brain, the emotional side of the brain will win in a walk. So the question is, if I can't eat because of the physical allergy, which I wish I had time to go into, and we can't keep from eating because of the mental twist, I am powerless over food, am I not? So it begs the question, what am I going to do now? Well, that's what the rest of the steps are about. Now, before there were steps, a guy by the name of Sam Shoemaker taught Bill Wilson in December of 1934 when he came to the Cavalry Mission in New York City where they were holding Oxford Group meetings. He taught Bill four impediments to God. And we're going to see them in our steps. The first impediment is a resentment that you will not let go of. A secret that you will not tell is second. A vicarious thrill that you will not stop. And a restitution that you will not make. And if you have an impediment, that means something that slows or stops progress. You must overcome those impediments through the working of the steps. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps means that I'm going to have to go through with the process. And if there's two steps that people underutilize, it's 2 and 10. And where you see people struggling in 4, 9, you see them struggling in 2. Because many of us, like me, are dragging a God into our programs that we didn't believe in as children. We don't believe in now, and we're trying to drag the hippo through the dog door and drag that God through our program, and it just won't work for me. I don't know if it'll work for you, but it won't work for me. We have to be aware of these things, and we have to take action. This is not a program for people who need it. This is not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. And the action of taking these steps will substitute for the effect of that Butterfinger bar, making us feel very good, because a Butterfinger bar will do something for me that it doesn't do for the normal eater. It gives me an almost certain and instant sense of security. It lights me up. Dr. Silkworth called it the effect, didn't he? My quivering, scared to death, ashamed to be alive insides for about 5 seconds will match your secure, together, wonderful, brave outsides. And maybe for 5 seconds I won't feel like slashing my throat with glass. Butterfinger bars make the world a beautiful place. And the process of bringing God or a power greater than yourself into the equation to affect this transition is called recovery. And that's what this is all about, Charlie Brown. This is about substituting what the Butterfinger bar will do for you, or the Kit Kat bar will do for you, for what your higher power will do for you. So that's essentially where we have to be. The 12th step was an amazing transition. Bill Wilson, now Lois Wilson, changed the history of the world in March of 1935. Bill was very enthusiastic. He hadn't been to Akron yet, and he hadn't had a talk with Dr. Silkworth about some of the shenanigans he was pulling out there. Bill was pulling guys off the bar stool in New York City and dragging them to the Oxford group meetings, and they didn't want to go. But he had lots of enthusiasm, and he came home one day in March of 1935, and Lois Wilson changed the course of human events, because Bill said, this doesn't work. He said, God gave me at the town's hospital this vision that I could sober up drunks. And Lois said, but you're staying sober. He said, oh, that's right. And for the very first time in his adult life, he was sober. Because he was working with other people. My time's up.
All right. So, it's Jeff again, still a compulsive overeater now. Here's the thing. Short of tying a prospect down and playing Harlan's last 10 minutes of speech, right, which would be a lovely thing to be able to do for somebody, because in that 10 minutes they would understand our conundrum. But short of tying them down, what is it that we can do to carry the message? So before I get into that, for those of you who know me, I am a producer of bad television, most particularly game. And as a game show producer, I like to research the crap out of everything. So I did some research for today, and I went on the Overeaters Anonymous website, and I downloaded this lovely pamphlet that is the OA membership survey, and also some advice on carrying the message. So let's talk about the numbers for a moment, because I know Harlan and I were speaking of this earlier, and it's a little nauseating, truthfully. There are between 3 and 4 million members of Alcoholics Anonymous in the United States. There are about 100,000 members of Overeaters Anonymous worldwide. Worldwide. 100,000 people. Now, I would postulate that there's a lot more people who have significant weight issues than have alcohol problems. So instead of having our conference here at this lovely hotel, we should be having it at the Staples Center, if not the Los Angeles Coliseum. Because that's how many people could benefit from what we have learned and what Bill Wilson set out for us and what Roseanne adapted for us and what we have learned with people who have 30, 40 years of abstinence or even people who have 30 or 40 minutes of abstinence. I mean, we have a playbook for these folks, but it's very difficult. Just in case you were wondering, there are 87% of the program is female, making Harlan and I a 13% anomaly in the program. And most of us are between 26 and 65. And I don't know why that makes a difference, truthfully. But age at which food became a problem, 41% of the people in our program, food became a problem for them between their 1 and 10. 41%. Really, almost half of us had this, you know, as an almost hereditary, or if not hereditary, certainly nurture. If not nature, certainly nurture problem. So what we have to do in order to carry the message is, first of all, we have to be abstaining members who have practiced the 12 steps. You know, you really shouldn't be thinking about recruiting anyone until you've recruited yourself and gotten yourself through. That is my opinion. By the way, all of this is our opinions. This is my opinion. I am opinionated, by the way. You might have noticed that. And so you don't need to necessarily agree with me, because I'm going to say some things that I'll probably get a call from World Service soon. But at any rate, there's, you know, so we have, but we, once you're through the steps, once you're carrying the message, once you have a peace around your eating. And it doesn't really matter what your weight is. It matters about your serenity around food. You know, do you have the tools to keep yourself from going crazy? And why do we need the tools? You know, we have an obsession and we have an allergy. Allergy means an unusual reaction to food. My unusual reaction is I can't stop eating. So when I tell people that and I say, you know, I have an obsession, which is the voice in my head that tells me I have to eat, and the only thing that gets between that obsession and an allergy is God. And that is my experience. It's the only thing. And trust me, we've all tried it all. Right? We've all tried it all. Protein shakes were the beginning. I was going to say the icing on the cake, but that wouldn't be inappropriate. I've tried it all. Nothing worked but God. But if I go to somebody and say, you know, nothing works but God, why don't you come with me? They're going to think I'm some priest with a collection plate, which I'm not. As a matter of fact, I'm anti-doctrine. I'm anti-religion. I'm pro-spirituality. But I don't want anyone else telling me how to think. Two? Really? Oh, wow. All right. So a couple weeks ago, somebody came. I have a couple of apartments that I own that I rent. The guy came. He was about 400 pounds. It's a single, like a 12 by 14 room. Probably not the best place for him. And I said to him, you know, I don't think so, but call me next week. I'll let you know. And he called me, and I said, and I felt terrible because I knew I was doing this program, and I knew that I really needed to say something to him because I have an answer for what he's suffering from. He was obviously suffering. And so I didn't know what to do, so I didn't do anything, and I felt terrible. So when he called me, I tried to 12-step him, and I said, you know, very gently, you know, I used to weigh this much, blah, blah, blah. There's a program, no dues, no fees. I'm not looking to sell you anything. He said, really? And I said, yes, called Overeaters Anonymous, blah, 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 click. Now I felt a little sad for a moment. And then I said, he wasn't ready, and maybe the germ is in his head, and it doesn't matter. But we're not going to get to where we need to go, in my opinion, if we do person to person. We've got, you know, I watch television. You know, there's shows, medical shows, there's weight loss shows. None of them talk about what we do here. None of them talk. We need our Saturday evening post moment. But we have to be anonymous at the level of press, radio, TV, etc. So how do we do that? And I don't know the answer, but what I would put forth is that we need something greater. We need some providence, some stroke of providence to put us, you know, when a star the magnitude of the star that's now pushing the commercial diet plan that everybody's seeing on television, and I'm not going to mention names because it's against our traditions, but when that person goes on TV hawking that plan, which we know has a 95% recidivism rate, and we have, according to this, a 50% success rate. What are we supposed to do? I don't necessarily have an answer, but I am happy to be able to pose the question. And with that, I will pass it along to Audrey.
I love what I'm hearing today, Harlan. Thank you for being a historian. And Jeffrey, I really appreciate your showmanship and your numbers. I don't know how to read them. Graphics, charts, colors, percentages are kind of baffling to me. Just as much as, you know, so many choices of food when you wake up in the morning. What am I going to eat today? It's like the big question, right? It's like the big question of the day. I don't know that I've heard it completely, but the 12th step is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And someone told me recently that thinking about anybody besides myself is a spiritual awakening. And I thought, wow, that was like the biggest nugget, you know. So it doesn't matter how much time you have in OA, because the nuggets keep coming. And I can count time. Again, April 17th, 1993, of 22 years in program. And, you know, there's some days someone leaned across the table and she goes, and that doesn't mean, you know, bleep, right? We're being recorded. So I won't swear from the podium, but it didn't mean anything how much time I had. It just meant I had some knowledge of what it is we do and why we do what we do. And, you know, for me, it's just to have peace. It's to have peace in my life, peace in my heart. And, you know, and to work with others, which can be active, it can be passive. Sometimes working the 12th step for me is just to listen, you know, especially to the new person who's like out of their mind because they're all trying to put it together at Equinox. You know, they're all trying to put it together, you know, at the gym or in the home or who's food or who's not food. And I remember, for me, I had to stop throwing up. I was the bulimic. There's some of us. There's no Bulimics Anonymous, or I might just go over there and start Bulimics Anonymous. But we all kind of fit in. We all kind of fit in with whatever it is, the part of our disease that makes us unhappy in our skin, makes us unhappy in our genes, makes us feel like we need to look a different way. For me, what I've learned today in working with other sponsors and working with people and knowing that, you know what, we sign in the sign-in sheet, you know, how much time we have, and I can put the day I got into OA. I could put the day that I just walked in the door. You know, are we abstinent from the day we walked in the door? Are we abstinent from the day we stopped compulsively overeating? Are we abstinent from the day we started hating our bodies in the mirror? You know, what's our start? I think this is, I guess if there's a problem for me, it's like, how do we really recover? How do we listen to our sponsor? I find that working with someone that has what I want is the best way to work this program and to have a deep respect for the person that's walked before me. I also have a deep respect for the person that walks in after me. Again, you know, the newcomer, the eager, doe-eyed, willing, surrendered newcomer that really just wants peace. So for me, working the 12 step is just to be kind. If I find myself being unkind, if I find myself with my stern voice, like, haven't I told you this 5 times already? You know, when are you going to get it? I'm constitutionally incapable some days of being honest with myself. And that's my disease. And there's a lot of things in the way. But I have to say, after 22 years, as I unravel, I heard this early in my recovery, the onion skin, I am still unraveling pieces of me that I never knew existed because I buried them so deeply in my disease. I buried them so deeply in the Helms truck, the Thrifty's 5-cent ice cream cone, the lemon heads, the baked beans, the M&Ms, the jelly beans, Easter, sale food. You know, one of my abstinences after a holiday, I don't buy sale food. sell candy. I remember once I was in San Francisco and I rode the BART after going to Thrifty's and I just ate candy and went around in circles. You know, I'm abstinent from that today. And some people say, well, you know, are you at a healthy body weight? Or, you could really lose 30 pounds. And I've heard people tell me that. And it just hurts my feelings. Because I know every day I want to work towards that. You know, this last summer I put on, I'm a compulsive overeater. I could lose 20 pounds. My weight and the weight on my driver's license don't match. That is my goal. To have those two numbers really match. To be painstakingly honest or to really, it's just to be painstakingly honest. I could change that number and it frightens me for the world to know what I weigh because it does. And who's going to look at it anyway? You know, I thought we had 30 minutes each. Are we going to do another round? It's a 90-minute panel. Okay, so I'm done. But I really want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank our timer and our trusted servants that have made this panel happen. If you have any questions, we're here to answer them.
And finally, we're going to end our presentation before we take questions with Harlan.
Hi, I'm still Harlan. And if we continue on with the 12th step, it says here, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. I am not a marriage counselor. I am not a counselor of what you should do with your finances. I'm not a counselor of anything. This is the message. I'm holding up the big book for those listening on tape. This is the message that we have. This is the guide. And to take somebody through this book is a joy, it is a pleasure, and as Dr. Bob said, it is a way for me to pay back the people who took the time to bring this message to me. Now, we can hear all these various numbers of 50% recovery. I'm not going to dispute my friend Jeff. I love him. But it has been my honor and privilege to travel this country up and back and back and forth doing big book studies in most of the states in this union. And you know what I noticed that on page XX of the foreword to the second edition, page 20 of the foreword to the second edition, it clearly states that of 100 alcoholics who came into AA, 50% got sober at once. Of the remaining 50, 25 came in and got sober, and the other 25% showed some improvement. That's 75% recovery. We can't talk about 75% recovery. Excuse me, Jeff. We can't talk about 50% recovery. I've been in these rooms 37 years. We can't talk about 10% recovery. We are lucky, in my opinion, if we are recovering at 2, 3% tops. And why? Because you have situations that I have seen and I have also witnessed that we are not passing this message to the newcomer, the message of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the more we dilute this message, the lower our recovery rates are going to continue to fall. And there are people coming into these rooms, and they are battered and they are bruised. More than on one occasion, I have gone to meetings with gals whose husbands have beat the daylights out of them for gaining weight. On some occasion, I have been to meetings with fellas whose wives have, let's just say, cut them off because they have gained weight. The people sitting in these rooms have paid $100,000 and decades of their life to be a member of this fellowship, and the suffering is unbelievable. We have a responsibility. And the responsibility is not to call me and say, I'm sponsoring Joe, and he keeps eating. Leave Joe alone. Chapter 7, leave him alone. He does not want to do this. How do you demonstrate you want to do this? You do it. It's an action program. It's not a program for people who need it, not a program for people who want it. It's a program for people who do it. We are the only ones that can reach these people. Dr. Silkworth tells us that in order for the message to be carried, it must have depth and weight. What did Ebby bring Bill? Great information? No. He brought him identification. What did Bill bring Bob? Great information? Yeah. Bob, being a doctor, did not know about the allergy nor the twist of the mind. But Bill brought Bob something he had never had before. He brought him identification. One alcoholic to the next alcoholic. And there are people who have been raped and people who have been abandoned and people who have been molested and people who have suffered unbelievable pain. I've spent more than decades of my life wondering what prenatal felony had I committed to be doomed to such an illness. I had no idea what I did, and I did not want to live in this world. Damn it, there should be Dutch doors on every meeting with the top nailed shut, because if you don't crawl in, you're not going to stay. You are not going to stay. It is identification. To the world, you're a person. To that person who comes in broken and beat down after the psychiatrists and the doctors and the surgeries and the God knows what. To that person, you could be the world. You can light them up. You can help them where no one else can. If you will let this blue book called Alcoholics, that's where the Monday night meeting is for our stories there. Don't lose that. Okay, now, you can reach them where no one else can. And you owe. Every time I walk into these rooms, I walk in here on the shoulders of giants. In 1935... in Akron, Ohio, a spark was struck when Bill met Bob in the Cyberling Gatehouse. Clarence Snyder, Jimmy Burwell, Ernie Galbraith, who we learned as a, you know, he failed, so we learned from him too, and he came back and he failed. And Ebby came in and went out and came in and went out. And then Roseanne and A.G. Ainsworth. And somehow that message got to you. Dr. Bob left us an inheritance. He left us an inheritance when he said, let's keep it simple. Let's not louse it up with complexities that are only of interest to the psychologist, the psychiatrist, and the clinical mind. He said, this is when it's boiled to the last, is love and service. And we all know what love is, and we all know what service is. Let's be on guard for that erring member among us, the tongue. Let's use it judiciously. Let's lift the man up to the rung of the ladder on which you now stand. It is a duty, and it is a pleasure. Before we close, let's go to page 100 and look at the 12-step promises. And I didn't even say that we're going to practice these principles in all our affairs, and I'd feel irresponsible on the airplane home tomorrow if I didn't. But let's go to page 100 if you have it with you. I'll read the 12-step promises. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. How much time do I have? I'm out of time. I can't tell the apple seed story. Okay, ask me about any idiot can count the seeds in an apple.
I'll ask it, but I just have to read this first. Okay, so we're done. We have 18 minutes apparently. Yes. And if you get discouraged, I encourage you to purchase this this electronic download or tape or CD or whatever they do, and listen to Harlan's last 10 minutes, because that will encourage you, in my opinion, to keep moving forward. It is now time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand and I will call on as many questions as possible. Give me a second here. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording. We are recording the panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible, God forbid, to the recording. So who would like? So in other words, if you want to be anonymous, whisper to someone who doesn't care as much. Sir. No, we have 18 minutes, though, for the timers, please. Yes, sir.
Besides the apple story, what do all of you think about teaching the 12 lessons in how to live. So why don't we teach it?
I have a good one, but you probably have a better one.
We'll all take a quick glance. I don't believe in morality in public education. So if you're talking about, because I don't want to teach my children about Christ or Buddha or anything else or Adonai, as a Jewish person, I've always, been a little bit suspicious of people trying to teach my children morality. That's for up to me to do. I have a daughter who's a compulsive overeater. I am desperate for her to be ready for me to teach her the 12 steps. She's not there yet. So for me, I don't think that it's appropriate for anybody to teach their morality to my child. That's my job. That's my opinion.
Audrey, compulsive overeater, just to address that, as well as we practice the 12 steps, we also practice the 12 traditions. And I don't know, there's probably a tradition thumper out there that knows which tradition it is, that we're not allied with any sect denomination and we're completely autonomous. So that's why we're talking about the 12 step and the principle of attraction, not promotion. So if people see Jeff walking down the street and 6 months later they see him 30 pounds lighter, they might come up to him and ask him how they did it. And I didn't get to tell the story of how I got 12-stepped, which was, you know, on the 43rd floor of the tower in Century City. I was a temp receptionist, and I saw somebody at work gradually lose weight. And one day I asked her, how'd you do it? And she took me to dinner, and then she took me to a meeting. And I haven't left since. So it is attraction, not promotion. And there might be another experience here, so I'm going to pass this on. But it's attraction, not promotion. And they will come. If they see what we have, they will come.
The original intent of the Oxford group was to bring this to government, bring it to business leaders so that they could change the world. But there unfortunately are, and I have a cold, so please excuse my voice. There are three bitter enemies of recovery: health, wealth, and youth. Health, wealth, and youth are very bitter enemies of recovery. I never saw anybody come in here because they were really healthy, really wealthy, or they were very young. It takes a lot of pain to really crawl through that door. I would love to live in a world where everybody did this, but I don't know that that's reality. I don't know that we could effectively do that. We have to get to the question. We're really running.
The question is, how can we carry the message to...
Here's how you carry the message to physicians or anyone's. Recover, recover, and recover. Those are the three ways you can carry the message. Recover, recover, and recover. Beyond that, you are powerless.
I don't know that we can add to that, so... Question? Yes? What? Well, did you have something to add to that?
I did. That's okay. Well, no. Let's move on. Because I didn't hear the end of the question. I heard him fill in the blank. He said, how do we, and he filled it in with doctors and professionals. Did you mean how, could you finish the question? Okay. So then he was correct in saying, how do you reach the professional? Yeah. Then there, that You maybe talk to Harlan and he'll know. I worked with someone in program. She was my sponsor and she'd had some surgery. And it was someone that I loved for over 20 years. And it really didn't, because my idea of my food was different than her idea of what she could do. So I thought the question was, how do you reach other people in the program? But there were definitely people that have... Yeah, attraction, not promotion, and there are ways to do that.
Ideas that we can give you after, and we'll do it afterwards. So, I'm sorry, I called on this young lady over here, and then Lynn, you'll be next.
Sure. When you 12 step, when you work your steps, you have to be very aware that any idiot can count the seeds in an apple, but only God can count the apples in a seed. I knew a guy who was not just a compulsive overeater, but he was also a drug addict and a raging alcoholic. And he lived here in Los Angeles. He's dead now, unfortunately. And one day, he was on call at the AA office to do 12-step work, and he goes to a very, very seedy motel in East Los Angeles. And a guy is calling the AA office because he just can't stop drinking. He wants to kill himself. So he and this other guy go into the room, and they talk to him for about an hour. And they found out that about 3 months after they spoke to him, he died. And one day, my friend was doing a speaking engagement in San Diego, California, and a guy walks in. It's a true story. Guy walks in, and he says, "You're so-and-so." He says, "Yes, I am." He says, "I recognized your voice." He said to him, "You saved my life." He said, "Do I know you? I don't believe I know you." He said, "Do you remember about 5 years ago when you came to that motel in East L.A. and you talked to my friend Hector?" "Yes." He says, "I was hiding under the bed. I heard every word you said, and I haven't had a drink since." So you never know. You just never, never know. Okay, giving it back to Jeff.
Okay, yes. Rob will be next.
I still feel
first, we'll repeat the question, which is, because for the people on the tape, you're in program, you're recovering, but when you tell people you don't eat sugar, you're still embarrassed. Is that the proper way to put it? Or reluctant, is that a better word? Reluctant to tell people about that. And so Harlan's going to take it, then I'll give you a little experience.
We really have to lean on step two. If we have a higher power that we're willing to believe in, there is nothing in the big book that says you have to believe. It just says, are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourself? And if you believe in that higher power, and you're in recovery, and you're doing the deal, there shouldn't be any shame. The one thing that we are is perfectionists. And the alcoholics, the drug addicts, the gamblers, they can be perfect. And it's hard for us to be perfect. But if you have a recovery and somebody asks you, go for it. The other thing that I will tell you, since I have the microphone, and I didn't think anybody was going to ask this, so I'm going to butt in here. We spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars and hundreds of thousands of man and women hours in Overeaters Anonymous attracting new people into these rooms. That's a good thing. We should do that. That's good. We have people dying right next to you. We have people in the rooms dying of their untreated eating disorder, and we are hugging them to death. We are hugging them to death. We can confront in a non-confrontational way. It is our responsibility. And if they feign hurt feelings, fine. I would rather piss them off than miss them, because they're dead. This is mind over matter. This disease doesn't mind killing you, and you don't matter. It'll take your legs off. It'll hook you up to a dialysis machine. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you do. This disease will kill you. I'm going to throw one more thing in because I don't know what the situation is, and I'm going to give you the microphone, and I'm going to shut up. Every meeting that I go to is 99 to 100% white. We need diversity. We need people to come in here, and I am sick and tired of looking at conventions of 99% white people. We need diversity. We will be better off when we are different. That's a goal for each and every one of us here today, is reach out, recover. And I want to come back here next. Don't make me come back there. But I want to come back here next year, and I want to see more of a racially diverse mix. And that'll be a better day for OA. I'm shutting up. I know you guys are getting pissed off at me.
Hi, it's Audrey. Just real quick. When I got into program, the question not only was, why aren't you eating sugar, but where are you? Like, where all of a sudden I've dropped out of some of my regular routines so that I could be in meetings. And I would tell people I was just having coffee with friends. Like, I had a new group of friends. And I remember when, you know, when I've given up certain things in my abstinence, what's important for me in that gap of what we think we should do and what we do, the God gap, is how do we feel? And so when people ask me, why don't I eat that, or, you know, what's wrong with corn, or you're not eating this, it doesn't make me feel good, you know. And I remember once in my first year of recovery, somebody gave me a 5-pound box of Godiva's, and I took it back there. It doesn't exist anymore, to May Company, and they had a Godiva section. It didn't matter if I had a receipt, and I remember putting it on the counter, and I just said, this will kill me. This will kill me. And she's like, okay, and we can give you a credit. And I said, that'd be great. You know, so it doesn't have to be so dramatic. It could just be, you know, it doesn't make me feel good today. And you might change your mind somewhere down the road. I'm not saying you will, but in Overeaters Anonymous, the program that I've been taught, my abstinence is my abstinence, and it's on a daily reprieve. We have 24 hours. So keep your answer simple and honor yourself. I think that would be the answer to that question.
And one last, you know, on that. From my experience, it's been baby steps. At first, I wouldn't tell. Then I said hard answer, easy answer, as I talked about before. And now I tell people that I'm a member of a 12-step fellowship that's about food, because I want them to ask me the next question, because I'm ready for it now, because I've been through the steps twice, because I've had the spiritual awakening. And so I would suggest to you that you take some baby steps, you tell some people you know and trust and see what their reaction is, and then when you see that they're not, you know, doing a Salem witch hunt on you because of your 12-step participation, because everybody knows about 12 steps now, that you can begin to open up more and more. And then, as Harlan said earlier, and do the work yourself, do the 12 steps, get through the steps, and carry the message. And I think that, you know, it's all an evolution. Unfortunately, you know, nothing happens overnight, and so the same thing with your program evolves, as will, I believe, your comfort in that fact. Rob, you had a question, sir?
Thank you. I'd like to get the panel's comments and reactions on this topic, which is the question of whether or not
I'm going to paraphrase you, Rob. Your question is, where, you know, back in the early days, they were dragging drunks off bar stools. Where do we go to find our drunks off the bar stools? Unfortunately, the person who's the true compulsive overeater doesn't have a whole lot of place to hide from us, because it's so obvious when we see them. But I've been in grocery lines, and I turn around and I see the guy behind me who is me 5 years ago. But how do I say to him in a grocery store, and would I have been open and receptive to that message myself 5 years or 10 years ago? You know, what would I have said to someone who said, I have a solution? I know what I would have said to him, and it wouldn't have been pretty. So I don't know, the answer is that we don't know that. There is a thing, and I'll hand it over to either of my compadres who might want to speak. I downloaded a thing, it's called Carrying the Message. Okay, it says, I'm open to talking about my recovery. It says, I mentioned how much my weight has changed, and I do that a lot. Oh, I used to be a big guy, or I used to love that ice cream. Used to love that ice cream, yeah. But it doesn't always work, so I don't know. And if you want to see, this is up here. If you'd like to take a look at it after the meeting, it's downloaded from the OA.org website, and it's called Carrying the Message. And it does have some interesting suggestions and some, candidly, not-so-interesting suggestions.
I just want to address that quickly with experience, strength, and hope. And thank you for asking that. I remember when I was out there, the Gold's Gym, Jane Fonda aerobics, drugs and alcohol and sex, clothing, parties, and men were all of my solution. And I remember working out at Gold's Gym when we had the aerobic chart. You know, as you'd work out, it'd say where your heart rate is and how many calories you're burning. And I remember, drugs and alcohol are a big part of my story. To be thin was to be loved, and I wanted to be loved. And I remember there was a woman in my aerobic class, and we were doing like the Janet Jackson thing, and she was in the back, thin, and so happy in her skin. And I said, how did you do it? And she said, Overeaters Anonymous. And I never went. I never came in the rooms until 1993. And had she said something to me, or had I gone? And I remember, I was also a manager of a pool, and so I was in my bathing suit, every day for work. And I was also bulimic, and I used to share my bulimia with someone else in program. And she had already learned about program, and she had this book, and she gave it to me. And when I moved from Palm Springs to LA, I threw it out. I wasn't ready. So I don't think it matters what you tell to someone. It's the by example. It's when they come to you. At Roxbury Park, I remember vans of people from whatever recovery house used to come in that would fill the room, and they would come listen to us. And I know that don't we have public information? And we put the information out there. But it doesn't mean we have to go get them. And I just think it works differently, because we can drag them in and we can tell them what to eat and they can lose weight. But that, to me, is third dimension recovery. That doesn't have the spiritual piece in there that makes them comfortable in their skin, or is going to keep the weight off. Property, power, prestige, what it says on the scale, what size are your jeans, is third dimensional recovery. And if it works for you, please keep coming back. Whatever keeps you coming back, but I think it's what's in our heart that makes the difference in what keeps us to stay, to keep us kind, and to listen.
That sounded like a school bell. I think we have time for one more, unless you felt... in that case, we won't have time for one more question.
All right. When I was listening to your question, my first reaction is my reaction. God will decide, because we are carrying a message whether we want to be or not. I have 17 years of abstinence, and my daughter just turned 21. So when she was 4, I got into recovery, hopefully for the last time. When she was 19 months old, I was in complete relapse. And I was starting to really get heavy again. And one day, it was a Sunday morning. Some of you have heard me tell this story. It was a Sunday morning. She was in her diaper. We were living in Eugene, Oregon. And my ex-wife was standing there unpacking more groceries than would feed the Fifth Army. And my little daughter reached up her hand in her diaper, and she opened up the refrigerator just a little bit and turned her head and said, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here. If looks could kill, I would have been vaporized." That was the message I was transmitting to that little baby. Number of years later, I'm in recovery. We're living in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's the premiere episode of a TV show that ran on prime time on ABC about a guy and his brother who won the lottery and wanted to run around making good on the things they had done wrong. My daughter looks at the TV, looks at me, looks at the TV, looks at me and says, this guy's just doing his eighth and ninth step, right, Dad? That's how far she had come without a word from me. We are carrying a message. People are seeing. If they don't want it, you can't force it on them. If they want it, you can't say the wrong thing. If they don't want it, you can't say the right thing.
And with that, we are going to bring this to a close. We want to thank Susan, our timer, and we want to thank everyone else for participating in this panel. We would like to say the Serenity Prayer. And it says then clear the room, but actually it's not so terrible because this is the last one of the day. So you don't camp out here, but you don't have to run out of the door. So if everyone could please stand, join hands, and we will all say the Serenity Prayer.
All doing it together?